Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live. Veterans have helped protect and defend our country. To defend us, all have sacrificed some, but some have sacrificed all. The gratitude owed to veterans is immeasurable. They serve our country honorably, without question, and without asking for anything in return. Join Westchester Talk Radio as we honor our veterans with tales of heroism and sacrifice every second Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. live from Scarsdale Ford on Central Park Avenue in Scarsdale. Why We Stand, a very special program made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, our hosts Scarsdale Ford and Shark Creative. And you can always listen on demand at westchestertalkradio.com under the podcast page. You can also find more information about Why We Stand at scarsdaleford.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. I am Joe Arcino. We are broadcasting live from Scarsdale Ford. We are, of course, produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, Game Sportswear, and, of course, we would not be possible without our great host, Scarsdale Ford. This week, National Book Lovers Day fell on this week, so we had to bring out our favorite author, Ronnie Imbras. Ronnie, I'm not kidding. You are our favorite author. You've been on the show before, but, you know, this is a great opportunity, I thought, to bring you back out here. So thank you for coming and joining our show today.
Thank you, Joe. Man, my pleasure. Believe me. Thank you.
Now, obviously, the last time you were here, weather was a little bit different, but we're going to make it work. But this is all about books this week. You have a beautiful book. And again, for anyone who's new and has joined us, Ronnie's the author of Fallen, Never Forgotten, Vietnam Memorials in the USA. We're going to, for those of you who haven't listened to Ronnie before, we're going to go in and talk about that a little bit. But for those of you who have heard him, I want to talk a bit of Ronnie. What are some of the books that have inspired you over the years? Some of your favorites.
The book by Colonel Hal Moore.
From We Were Soldiers.
Yes, absolutely. That was the major one. And then there, D-Day by Ambrose.
Oh, Stephen Ambrose.
Stephen Ambrose, yes.
Phenomenal one.
And the 100-Day War by Colonel McAuliffe, Taylor, Maxwell Taylor's son. Yeah. That was another one about the Iraqi war with the 101st went in and 100-hour war, not even 100 days, sorry, 100-hour war, yeah. And go way back, Red Badge of Courage. I mean, high school.
The movie, too, with Eddie, with Audie Murphy is, he was in a lot of great movies, but to me, I think even To Hell and Back and that, to me, are my two favorite ones. Love those.
Yeah, I'm more of a movie guy than a book guy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been said that the only thing I read these days is the scroll under the TV set on the bottom of the picture.
I mean, that's the funny thing is a lot of people always debate, you know, is the movie or the book. We Were Soldiers is one of the ones where I've heard a lot of people say the book was better than the movie. What do you think?
Well, Hollywood is Hollywood, and individual accounts are more accurate, but I think they did a pretty good job with that movie. And most people do on our Vietnam Veterans website on Facebook, our Facebook page. I mean, they tend to agree.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You run this amazing Facebook page, and we talked about it last time, too. But, you know, it's just you listen, and it's for people to help reconnect and share their stories and photos and everything. Do you think that there's a definitive book that Vietnam veterans such as yourself think, you know, if I'm someone and I want to learn about the war from the right perspective, is there a book that you think a lot of vets agree on is probably the go-to? Or maybe it is We Were Soldiers.
Well, there's one, Fire in the Lake by Fitzgerald. He did a that's an older book. But then again, it's 50 years since, you know, Vietnam is over. So it's there's a lot of publications out there, and again, and new ones are still coming out all the time. A lot of people they want to express the fact on the Facebook pages that we have, and a lot of them do. They have this book for sale or that book for sale, and now a lot of their children are interested in what their fathers were doing and what happened with them in the battles at the time in the country between the public situation of the protesting of the drafts, the draft issues and the race issues and the war issues and the peace issues. So complicated times.
Absolutely. Yeah. And your son came on last time, the two you talked, and you two put your book together, which is really cool. Did you ever think, you know, before you put Fallen, Never Forgotten, Vietnam Memorials in the USA together, did you ever see yourself being an author and putting something like that together? Was it ever anything in the back of your head you thought you might do?
Well, again, the reason that the main reason the book came out was that in 1968, 13 of my platoon and company mates were killed by friendly fire. And I promised myself that I would go home and tell and visit all the families of these soldiers and tell them what great people they were and what terrific soldiers they were. In fact, two of them guys had children. They never even saw their kids.
Tragic.
So when I got home, things just went every different which way. And in 2015, bringing one of my sons back to school up by Boston, we were on Interstate 90 on Memorial Day. And there was a sign that said Massachusetts Vietnam State Memorial. I said, hey, let's stop in and see. Maybe, you know, there's somebody there who knows this guy, Glenn Hubbard, who was killed that day. We got there. There's a big ceremony going on. And I asked the guy, I asked someone, I said, who's in charge? The guy, he says, the guy over there. And then I walk up to him. I said, would you mind mentioning this gentleman who happened to die in this friendly fire incident? He goes, no, you do it. So I said, all right, great, I'll go do it. So I was the last one up at the podium before the benediction and did the story, how the mortars walked in on us, and it was carnage all over the place, and it was crazy because it took 2 hours to cut the jungle down to get the choppers in and get the guys out. And then, lost my thought here. From that time forward, got excited with the lady stuck this. One lady came up from Channel 12 News up in Worcester, Massachusetts, and said to me, could you tell me that story again? I said, sure. So we did. And I got in the car and I said to my son, Matt, we got to go all over the country and do this. We got to visit these memorials. Like I told him the story about my promising the guys who I was going to go see their families. And I said to myself, well, gee, I still have two kids in high school, and I can't afford to leave my job and go around the country to visit all these memorials. So he goes, Dad, we could do that, get some professional photographers, go out and have them take the pictures. We do the research and blah, 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 and there you go. So from that point, that's how it got to the point of being an author 50 years later. So, no, I never thought about it. Well, I did think about it afterwards, so...
I think that's. Yeah. I just love the way it came together. You know, you worked with your family to make it happen, and it's one of those things where sometimes in life an event happens, and then it just changes. And you've really put together something truly special there. When you look back at it now, and you travel around, and you're able to share the story with people, what does it mean to you know when people are able to hold it in their hands and just get such profound meaning from it?
Well, lately, with this traveling wall that they have, actually there's several traveling walls that go around the country. We're starting to attend those more often for the simple reason that the people come there for that specific reason, the person or a person in their family or friend or relative, whatever, that is on the wall. And they haven't been to Washington yet. So they come to see this traveling wall, which is normally anywhere from 60 to 80% size of the wall in Washington. And once they come out of that event, they come out through a gate, then they have the vendors, because they don't let the vendors stay in the what they call this hallowed ground by the memorial. And they have people there, like Rolling Thunder's there, and Air Force and Army recruiters are there, and they have people selling patches and hats and, you know, things, T-shirts and stuff like that. And we have our little pop-up with selling the book. And it says something to the effect of the Fallen Never Forgotten, the Vietnam Memorials Veterans, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial book. And people are just amazed. And now some of them come over and say, hey, my friend or my sister or someone told me I have to get this book. And well, they buy it for the sake of, they bring it to a post or American Legion post or a VFW post, or they'll bring it to the local library. Junior high school library, because the kids today know nothing about Vietnam.
No.
And it's well-received, really well-received.
That is always great. And, you know, I think as an author, you kind of can come and give us that unique perspective. And there's so many challenges that go into not just writing the book and putting everything together and gathering the materials, but actually trying to produce it and get the book put together. You were just talking to us about the challenges that you've encountered when it comes to that. Do you think people really just don't understand sometimes how difficult it is to, from start to finish, to make it all happen?
Well, my son Matt, who's a tech guy, put about 1,000 hours.
That's incredible.
Getting all the pictures, all the documents from the Department of Defense, doing the layout, and getting the right printer to get the job done. And then we had to select together out of 350 entries the 50 individual state memorials that we were going to pick, along with the wall in Washington and a traveling wall. So, yeah, it's a process. Believe me, especially when you're doing like trying to do factual books.
Yes. So you want to make sure you don't miss anything, right?
Yeah, because you know we had to double check everything and triple check some of the things, even from where they got the granite for a headstone.
Wow.
So yeah.
How do you make sure? You know, combing through books?
A little secret there. Okay.
Here we go. It was an inside secret.
Yeah.
From
okay.
Our good friend Ronnie.
We first went to the internet and we got all the information we could on the particular monument or that we wanted to do with that state. Then I got on the phone at 6 o'clock at night in New York, the East Coast, and called the individual American Legion posts or VVA posts or chapter posts or VFW, things like that. And I would ask for the post commander, vice commander, sergeant at arms, secretary, adjutant, whoever was there to give me information. A lot of times it fell into the lap of the bartender, which they know more than anybody about anything anyway. So actually I put one in the back of the book as an acknowledgement. And I have to, for the second edition, I have to put that in bartender because I was a little insecure and embarrassed about putting bartender there. But now I got to give her Katie Clemens from Lexington, Kentucky, a shout out here.
Wow.
That she's
going to
be listed as bartender, not just staff. And so we got all that information from the internet. Then we got all the information from every post that we decided to do and put it in another pile. And then after we got finished them all, I had to go back and speak to a different person at the post to clarify something as simple as, who did your sculptures? Was that Joe Smith? Oh, no, that was Mary Johnson or something. Wow. Just to, you know.
Amazing research.
To clarify, to make sure that the granite came from the right place, that the brick pavers came from the right place. From this guy was the head of the effort to, secure the funds. And this guy was a person on this committee who secured the property and the land to put the monument up. And, yeah, it was so that I would do that from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night because my mom always said to me, don't call anybody after 9 o'clock unless this is an emergency. And but guess what time it is in California? 6 o'clock again.
Yeah.
So it went from 6 at night or 5:30, 6 o'clock at night to 12, 1, 2 in the morning.
Wow.
Because
tremendous hard work.
Now we're calling Colorado and Arizona and Seattle and everywhere else to, So that took about 5 months actually to get together. And then we went to press. So now we're looking for our second printing, which is, we're finally getting hands around a printer to do our second printing. So that should be really good again. We're happy.
Well, we hope that if the right person hears, maybe they have some that can help you out in some way too. But I mean, it really, you could just tell flipping through the opening pages how much work was put into, how much heart was put into it, how much thorough research was put into it. One of our viewers asked a question that I wanted to get to you before we end today. They asked, about, because especially on your page, on the Facebook page, there's so many people who share their photos from the war. How did that work? Was there individual cameras that soldiers had? Who took so many of these great photos that we're able to see on your page that so many people share?
The old Instamatic.
Kodak. That was it.
Unbelievable. It fit in your ammo pouch really nice and simply. The cartridges were right there, sort of like, they snap in and out. There was no loading a roll of film up, like the old 35 millimeter where the film was hanging out the end. You had to wrap it and stuff. Just pop it out, pop it in. Yeah, most of the pictures come from the guys come from in that era was the Instamatic, which is terrific.
Did you have one of them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you could identify it by that little white border, a 4x4 picture. There was no 4x6s and 6x8s or anything like that. And you could tell a professional photographer from the war photographer pictures than the Instamatic. That was classic. That's a classic Vietnam picture.
Very interesting. And you know, yeah. I think I'm glad we were able to get to that answer, because I know I even thought about that myself a little bit too, because you see so many great photos, but obviously where do the else come from? Well, you just cleared that up for us. Ronnie, anything else you want to add before we end today?
A simple fact that we're going to do a series of children's books now.
Yes.
It has to do with the military and children. And we're going to go from, should be out by Veterans Day. So hopefully, you'll have us back and we can talk about that.
You can guarantee we're going to have you back because, like I said, you are our favorite author. National Book Lovers Day was this week, and we had to get you on here. And Ronnie, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You always teach us something new, and we wish you the best of luck, and we're going to have you on again soon.
Thank you very much.
Ronnie and Bras, everyone, I'm Joe Arcino. You're listening. This is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. Thank you, everyone. And, again, don't forget to check out Fallen, Never Forgotten, Vietnam Memorials in the USA. We'll be right back.
At Indian Point, we've helped power Westchester and New York City for about 4 decades. Recently, as part of an agreement with New York State, we are working toward an early and orderly shutdown of the facility by 2021. Until then, we'll continue safely generating about 25% of the reliable, round-the-clock electricity that powers the city and Westchester, all with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions. Safety is, as it always has been, the top priority for everyone at the plant. We will continue to keep Indian Point fully staffed, and full-time inspectors from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will monitor our daily operations. We'll also continue to play an important role in our community as a taxpayer and active participant in local charities. Indian Point Energy Center is still working for you, and it's our honor to continue to serve the people of New York. If you have questions about our ongoing operations, please visit safesecurevital.com.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit safesecurevital.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. I am Joe Arcino, and we are broadcasting live from Scarsdale Ford. We are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, Game Sportswear, and then once again, we could not be doing what we're doing right now without our gracious host, Scarsdale Ford. Right now, I am joined by Janet Lefkowitz, the tennis director for the town of Greenberg. You heard her last week, and we kind of brought her back to follow up about the Tennis Serving Vets event, and she's got another great event to mention as well. But Janet, thank you for coming out again today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Joe.
I mentioned to our first guest, Ronnie and Bras, the last times you guys have all been out here, we've been outside in front of the dealership, and the weather this time didn't cooperate, but we've got a nice little comfy spot here.
Yeah.
But Janet, let's talk about the last event. Everyone was so excited to hear about the Tennis Serving Vets event. I heard from what I've heard, everything went phenomenally well.
Yep.
But that's why you're here. How did it go?
Well,
think it
all
went?
Things considered, I thought it was terrific. We had no cooperation from the weather. It was incredibly hot and humid. But we did have several of the vets come out, and we had the expertise of Joe Curto's pros. He's the owner at Yonkers Indoor Tennis, and he's been a prince. He's terrific. Allie Goldman from USTA Eastern, who's a very persistent young woman,
yes.
And everybody said to her, cancel, 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 and she said, no, we're going to be okay, and sure enough, we didn't have a drop of rain, and with the guys who were out there over 2 hours and having the time of their lives, they loved it. So what I did is I said to myself, I'm going to strike while the iron is hot. I got them to sign up. I'm going to do a program for them this fall. Joe Curto is going to give space for them in the winter, and then we're going to come back outside to Veteran Park in the spring.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what Allie always talks about, and what you mentioned too, is, this is just kind of the introduction, but the goal is to get these guys introduced to the sport for life.
Right.
And you, it seems like you've got them to take that next step, which is great to hear.
Yeah, and I spoke to Isaac Cortez, who's been
Isaac is the best.
A buddy the last 2 years, and he says they're just chafing at the bit to get out there. And I'm unfortunately very busy right now, but first week in September, on Wednesdays from 5:30 to 7, at Anthony F. Veteran Park, we're going to start a program. We're going to try to do an 8-week program and see how that goes. But I was very impressed with their skills. I mean, some of these guys hit the ball very, very well. And the important thing about this, Joe, is that they're coming out and having fun.
Yes.
That they are in a social situation, because one of the worst parts of any injury or a negative experience is the social isolation. And if we can get them to come out, my dream evening is they come, they do tennis, they go out for dinner, and they sit in a restaurant and they drink some beer and have a nice dinner, and they become friends, and then this mushrooms, and they speak to other guys, and it becomes a regular thing for them. It's something for them to look forward to. It's fun. It's physically very good for them. But most importantly, it's socially very good for them.
You know, that's very interesting. I think we always understand that, you know, physically it's good to get out there and just, but more than anything, it's like you said, it's that bonding. It's being around other like-minded veterans and being able to share experiences. Isaac has talked to us about how much that helped him.
Yep.
And what it was like. And again, he's like many of these other people who tennis had never been. I mean, that's what amazed me so much about Isaac's story is he'd never really picked up a tennis racket. And now it's probably one of the most important parts of his life.
Yeah.
And hopefully for other people that they're on that track too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's a role model as far as I'm concerned, because he took an opportunity, he took advantage of it. He's been part. I have a group of it's right now all women, group of people who do MS, who have MS, they have Parkinson's, traumatic brain injury, and Isaac has been a part of that group, and he loves it. It's his harem, Joe. There are all these women and Isaac.
Isaac, and he's such a knowledgeable guy, too. And, you know, he's got that. He's the guy who could teach me anything,
for
sure.
And he comes, and he has the time of his life. And, again, it's the social contact. The women get a big kick out of him, so that's been fun. And now I've scheduled the Wounded Warriors tennis for the same time as this other group I just mentioned. So I want them to get to know one another,
yeah.
And we can intermingle the class. It'll be good for both groups. And I'm really looking for something very positive to come out of that experience.
Well, you know, you're just doing something so wonderful, and it's just so nice to hear stories like this, that there are people like you out there who are helping people who really need the help.
You know, it's really, people say that to me all the time, and I tell them, I'm being very selfish. I get so much out of this. If you do this kind of work, you get 150% out of this. And so, do I love to do it? Yeah, I love to do it. And it's very gratifying, but you get such a feeling. I call it, you know, this is like doing drugs without the drugs.
And that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a healthy way to do
it.
And so my organization, HERO, works with a tremendous variety of people with disabilities. And the same things apply no matter who they are. Doesn't matter. It's number one is having fun. We want them to have a good time. Second of all, we want them to have a good physical experience, and for some of them that's a challenge because of whatever issues they're dealing with. And thirdly, we want positive social contact. And people can be around other people. It doesn't mean that they're part of what's going on. And I think that's been a problem for a very long time for disabled people. And the general public needs to do their part. They need to be encouraging. They need to smile at these guys. When I first started doing this, some people's behavior was a little bit disappointing. Then they discovered these were just people. They came every week. They played tennis, you know, and some of the people who were like that to start have now become our biggest friends.
That's what it's all about.
So it's not just changing things for the disabled community, but it's getting the bigger community to accept the fact that they have a right to be on a tennis court, They have a right to be having fun, and these other people may get something out of it they never realized could happen.
Absolutely.
And it's nice to see when some of them who started by grimacing at us now greet people, say hello, ask how they are, exchange conversation. And that's another positive offshoot of what we do.
There's no question. And it just really is an amazing thing that you're doing. And again, I always say it, but when Allie told me, about the first event you guys did where after it was over, there were vets who were still just playing because they were enjoying it so much. To me, that said it all, that you could take a sport like this and then just introduce someone to it, and then they just... instant connection like that.
And they can play it with one other person and one tennis ball. It's not an expensive sport,
yes.
Interestingly enough. They can go to public courts. There are a lot of opportunities for these guys. And once we get them to that point, then to me, that's a success story.
When you were mentioning to us before how you think one of the best-kept secrets that not enough people know about is the beautiful facilities you guys have access to.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I'm the tennis director, and I work out of Anthony F. Veteran Park, which is sort of, I kind of understand why people aren't aware it's there. It's sort of in the middle of nowhere. There are very few landmarks around. It is a 19-court facility.
19.
All the courts are lit. It is a public facility. And we want people to come and play. I want a lot of people on the tennis courts. I don't want to look at empty tennis courts.
No, you want those. You want lively games.
We run a lot of organized programs, but for recreational tennis, it's perfect. And it's not difficult to get to. I wish I would see more people out there. And when I meet people who lived in Greenberg all these years and they don't even know where it is, it's a little bit distressing, because we do write. There are articles in the paper. We have a brochure. We're part of the bigger recreation department. That's the other thing. I'm hoping to get more people out on the courts. It's a wonderful sport, just in general in terms of your physical health. But again, even for able-bodied people, it's the social component.
Yes.
That's, again, so important. And people develop lifelong friendships. It's a very, very positive thing. Yeah.
Is there a big, I know Isaac was telling us about on the West Coast, this tennis program for helping heal vets started because obviously the weather there, you're always going to have a little bit of an upgrade over us on the East Coast. But obviously, the indoor facilities we have here are tremendous, too, are they not?
Yes, they're wonderful, but unfortunately, not everybody is Joe Curto.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't all have access.
Joe has
to them.
Made a conscious commitment to this population. Not everybody is they're not bad people, Joe. They just have other priorities, and I understand that. But you can go to indoor facilities. I would hope that the people who run them understand who these people are. We should never be charging these people a penny.
They've done enough for us. It's our turn to help them.
The facility should make a concerted effort to find a pro who'd be willing to work with them. And that's what we did. This was an interesting story. I got an email from the guy on the West Coast. So I'm getting an email from a guy in California who heard about me. I don't know who he spoke to. And he said, Isaac is going to be in Yonkers. I said, oh, that's around the corner. I said, please get in touch with him. I waited the amount of time they told me to, got in touch. He was on the court in the snap of a finger.
Wow.
We were out there. And I now know Isaac, it's going to be 3 years. And, he's had some time off because of chronic injury and stuff like that. But, I try to constantly encourage him to come out. And he's a terrific guy.
He's one of our absolute favorite people.
We had a hero event over at the Tennis Innovators Academy on Wednesday to raise money, and Isaac showed up, and we hit for a while, and he met the people that were there. He had a wonderful time, and that's what he does. He makes himself available, and he takes advantage of opportunities. And he's been a joy. I love working with
him. Well, he speaks the world of you as well. So you two have definitely been very important to each other.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
And he's always very excited when I tell him that you're coming on the show.
Right.
Before we end, though, why don't we talk once more again, reiterate the upcoming event you've got coming up for the Heroes
so
Tennis for Wounded
We're going to be
Warriors.
Over, as I said, at Veteran Park. It's going to be on Wednesdays from 5:30 to 7 p.m. I'm going to try to run it using September and October, which, frankly, are very nice months to play tennis. It's usually not terribly hot, and it's comfortable. And what I'm hoping to do for these guys is give them the basic skills to go out and play a game. Some of them have them. Some of them, I noticed, were sort of trying to hit the fuzz off the ball. They have to kind of tone the swings down. But when they leave that eight-week program, they should be able to go out with a buddy. They'll know how to score. They'll know how to play up points. If they don't want to do that, that's fine, too. But I think they get a kick out of the competition.
Yeah, everyone wants to
win a little. And then at the end of October, or maybe early November, depending on whether we get a little cooperation from the weather, they're going to go down to Yonkers Indoor Tennis, and they're going to have space available for them through the winter, so I'm assuming until April. And then I will run another program in the spring. And if they're really doing well, then I'll set something up for the summer.
Wow.
So this becomes a place for them to come to sharpen their skills. And I'm hoping to generate more people. We have 6 right now. I'd love to have 10 people in the program. And I'm hoping that these guys speak to their buddies. And if they're enjoying themselves, they encourage them to come out. Because that would be nice. The more, the merrier.
Absolutely.
Okay? So that's the plan.
Well, Janet, what you're doing is just absolutely phenomenal. I want to give everyone your email in case they have any way they want to reach out to you and try to help.
Right.
It's herojl1@aol.com. Janet, thank you so much for coming on again. We admire so much everything you're doing. And anytime you want to come on and update us about how everything's going, you're always welcome.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Of course.
For giving us the opportunity to do this. And I will be in touch with you, and when things happen, I'll come back on and let you know how it's going.
You've got that right. Everyone, I'm Joe Arcino, and you are listening. This is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. We're going to be here at Scarsdale Ford, so don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
When considering a building or renovation project, you need someone on your side. An experienced and knowledgeable company with expertise in planning, budgeting, organization, and control. Whether the project is a house, a school, a retail location, or an office building, you need Reverso Associates on your side. They're focused on 2 things: to provide or assist in the management of building programs from the earliest planning through occupancy, and to provide a flexible, experienced management consulting capability specializing in the needs of the construction industry. With a staff of architects, engineers, construction managers, estimators, construction accountants, schedulers, draftsmen, and other specialists, and with experience from over 1,000 projects, Reverso Associates can meet your needs effectively. When deciding on any type of construction project, or if a project is heading in the wrong direction, you need the expertise and experience of Reverso Associates on your side. Call for a consultation, 914-723-3474, or visit reversoassociates.com. Reverso Associates, a team of experts to get the job done.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from Scarsdale Ford. I'm your host, Joe Arcino, and we are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, Game Sportswear, and once again, we could not be doing this without our gracious host, Scarsdale Ford. Right now, we have Ken Kratzer from Sons of the American Legion Radio. He is our inside man for Army football this season. Ken, you've been with us the last couple times, and thank you for being with us again.
Well, our pleasure. You do a great job. You have great guests from the veterans community on your show every week. And, you know, I mentioned there's a fascinating, very sobering article on the front page of the New York Times Magazine section. I got it this morning, profiling the story of a soldier from the Bronx who joined the 1st Infantry Division sent to Afghanistan and struggles. And the whole unit was struggling. He talked about, you know, Afghanistan being a forgotten war. And, you know, that really the struggles even to win the hearts and minds of people there. So fascinating article, front page of the New York Times Magazine, very in-depth. It's a part of a book that's coming out. So it's very well worth spending a little time to read.
And we appreciate the heads up, sir. I know a lot of people are always looking for good reading material. And this week was National Book Lovers Day. We had our author, Ronnie Imbros, on here to kind of talk about his book. So it's always good to have more reading material. But, Ken, you know, today, the last couple times you were here, we were outside. It was bright and shiny. Not a similar day today, but that is not going to stop you from being at Army football practice later. You've been with the team for their first practice. You've been around it. How are things shaping up so far?
Well, I was like Coach Munkin was down at Rice University for a game, and it's pouring rain the whole game. And so he does a little interview going out on the field, and the commentator asks him about playing in the rain, and he says, "We're the U.S. Army. The rain doesn't stop us."
I like that. That is the that's the motto. It is.
It's not raining. It's not training. It's their motto. Actually, we had a chance to watch the freshmen finish their basic training on Monday, and they do something called the march back to West Point from Camp Buckner, about 12 miles, full packs. They start in the middle of the night. They get to West Point about 10 in the morning, and they get a tremendous recognition from the community at West Point in front of the superintendent's house. And they showed some film clips of the freshmen at West Point doing the obstacle courses in the rain, one of those big rainstorms we had last week. And they don't stop. They obviously make sure what's a safety limit, where, you know, what's the point where they have to stop because of weather conditions. Certainly lightning's a factor. But they keep training because that's how it is in the field. And they say the war doesn't stop because of the rain.
It's absolutely true. Ken, we're getting close. August 31st, Army versus Duke. We're getting very close. How do you think the team is shaping up so far?
Well, the big thing with this Army team and what Jeff Monk and the head coach has brought in as coaches is depth. And they've got a lot of players, and they lost some very talented seniors who helped Army win the Commander Chief Trophy the first time in 20 years. And the big loss is the quarterback, Ahmad Bradshaw, who has just set records for the amount of rushing, and really just for his ability to manage the football, which they all talk about. He only had four fumbles last year, running the option where he's running the ball almost every play. And so they've got some losses. They lost four of their offensive linemen. Fortunately, they hold on to their big center, Bryce Holland. It'll be his third year at center for Army. So that helps a lot. We were talking to their big offensive guard from Frisco, Texas. He kept reminding us, Jackson Deaton. He's 6'6", 310, which is a little unusual for Army to have players that big. But that's something Jeff Munkin has insisted on, that he's got to have offensive linemen the size of other comparable schools are going to play. Because 300-pound offensive lineman is ubiquitous in college football now. And Army was trying to get by with 260, 270-pound players, and it just doesn't work. So the reason they've had success is that Jeff Munkin has brought in strength and conditioning coaches, and they're able to build up the players in the offseason. One of the players was talking about how tough it is when they do their field training for three, 4 weeks in the summer where they can't do anything. And it's hard to find proper meals. I mean, they're eating these the Army rations. They love to talk about the MREs. Yeah, you know about it. And even with the Commandant was saying, it's a challenge for soldiers to stay in shape when they're doing Army duty because it's different. And and then on defense, so they got to find a quarterback, and that's one of the big things we'll look at in the scrimmage this afternoon. They'll be scrimmaging from 3 to 5 o'clock. And we got to see Kelvin Hopkins, the junior, was the leading candidate coming out of spring practice. He played sparingly along with Luke Langdon, who's going to be a senior, behind Ahmad Bradshaw. They came in for some passing plays mostly. And Kelvin managed the ball well. He's not a big player, but neither was Ahmad Bradshaw. But I think he's got the inside track. They tried one of the slot backs at quarterback, Kel Walker, who is a phenomenal player. He's the kind of guy, it could be a backup point guard on the basketball team because he's got great hands. And one of the keys in the offense is having somebody who can catch the pitch out. Because you fumble the pitch out, You know, you have a fumble and you can lose the ball and that's it. And that's why they don't do it in the NFL very often. But in college, they manage it and they time it because, as Jackson Deaton was telling us, his job as a guard is to open up a hole for the fullback, for the first option. And they do run that a lot. Army's got four talented fullbacks ready to go for the season. And the next option is for the quarterback to run off tackle if he sees an opening. If he doesn't, then his option is to pitch the ball to the trailing slot back.
Okay.
And so that's what the triple option is. And that's what they ran 95% of the time. When they have to drop back to pass, things don't always go so well.
It's not always pretty, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Ken, everyone is so excited for the Oklahoma game, obviously. It's the one on the calendar you're probably circling right off the bat. Does Army have a shot in this one?
Well, it's part of Army's strategy. I mean, Army is a three-time national champion. They've had three Heisman Trophy winners. Yes, it really was from the World War II era. But they still feel that they are a big part of the national college football scene. They were a big part in starting the National Football Foundation, which runs the Hall of Fame and gives out the major awards. So they want to be part of the scene. And what their strategy has been is to play one top 20 team a year. And they played Stanford. They had a home-and-home with Stanford a few years ago. They played Notre Dame a few times. Last year, they went out to Ohio State. And the Ohio State game was 17-7 in the third quarter. And in the second quarter of that game, Army ran, got the ball back after a punt on their one-yard line. It looked bad. And they ran an 18-play drive, didn't pass the ball once, had Ohio State on their heels because they're not used to playing more than six, seven plays in a row on defense. And they're playing 18 plays, so an Army scored on them. So, you know, they got a shot. Oklahoma, Sports Illustrated just ranked them number five in the country. They've won the Big 12 the last 3 years.
No Baker Mayfield, obviously.
Yeah, they got a new guy, Kyler Murray, Sports Illustrated thinks will be the starter there. They're going to be loaded. They just rebuilt the football stadium in Oklahoma into a palace. I think they call it the Palace on the Prairie. So there'll be about 70 or 80,000 people there. But, you know, it's nice. As I think I mentioned the day before, I'm going to go out to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is the big home of the field artillery for the U.S. Army. And my dad commissioned there, as well as his brother, in October 1942, after spending the summer there. He came out of the New York National Guard and was in uniform on September 7th, 41. So I'm getting a chance to go see that place I've heard about and realized it was a big part of my dad's Army career. And so we're going to try and spend a day out at Fort Sill and see it, do some reports, and then go to Oklahoma. But we can't, you know, the thing for Army is their opener at Duke is very important. They managed to beat Duke at home last year after losing to them a number of years in a row. They played them very close in a rainstorm game down in Durham a couple of years ago. But this is a key one because it could get them off to a good start. And it's one of those games you say, you know, it's a fair fight game. It's on, you know, it's one of those games could go either way. Army's going to be breaking in a new quarterback. So it's going to be a challenge. But they got the running game. And, you know, we'll see what happens here. But it's a very important game. They come home to play Liberty and Hawaii, two winnable games, I would say, and then the Oklahoma trip, and then they go up to Buffalo. And that's really the toughest part of their schedule until they get to Air Force and Navy later on.
The tone for it will be set in the Duke game, no question. Ken, you are the best at covering Army football. You really are. For people who want to see everything that happens later today and moving forward, where can they follow you?
Well, our two big places on Facebook is West Point Football Report and on Twitter at Suns Legion Radio. And also you can go to my YouTube page. We'll have some of the video up there later today. But, it's some good people up there. I think Adeen Darling has been covering Army football for 30 years. And John Minko from WFAN has been covering Army football for many years. He does a pregame show now. So, and Rich DeMarco. Rich helped me out when we went to the White House. He gave me some space on the back podium.
Wow.
And he's a great guy. I always think he's going to be working on Sundays 1 year. And he does a lot of great. He's the radio voice.
Ken Kratzer, everyone, thank you so much, Ken. As always, you can check him out. And we're going to have him on again as we get closer to the season. Everyone, I'm Joe Arcino. You're listening. This is Why We Stand. Don't go anywhere.
Contractors, can't find the construction equipment you need?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. Durante Rentals has it all, from skid steers to cement mixers, light towers to mini excavators, generators to scissor lifts. Our equipment is always available and always well-maintained.
Are you worried about employee downtime due to equipment delivery delays?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. At Durante Rentals, on-time delivery of your construction equipment is our priority.
Is your job site located in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. With 7 metro area locations, Durante Rentals has got you covered.
Do you want to be treated as more than just a number?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. As a family-owned business, customer service has always been Durante Rentals' number one priority.
Are you looking to save time and money on your next construction project?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. The friendly and knowledgeable staff at Durante Rentals makes renting equipment easy and affordable.
With locations in Mount Vernon, the Bronx, West Nyack, Flushing, Queens, Carmel, Elmsford, and Brewster, call Durante Rentals at 1-800-DURANTI or click DuranteRentals.com.
Durante Rentals, the most dependable name in construction equipment rentals, sales, parts, and service. Call 1-800-DURANTI today. We're back.
Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. I am Joe Arcino. We are broadcasting live from Scarsdale Ford. We are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, Game Sportswear, and of course, we could not be doing this without our gracious host, Scarsdale Ford. Right now, I am joined by Norm Dowerer from the 106th Cavalry Group. He does World War II living history display. We got to meet him at last weekend's event at Lasden Park, the historical military vehicle show. For us, he was one of the best exhibits on the entire scene. We really enjoyed getting to interact with him. Norm, thank you for joining the show today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Of course. Now, Norm, we're going to talk a lot about your World War II living history display later. But first, give the audience a little bit of background on yourself.
Okay. I was born in 1939 in Germany. So my early years were actually experienced the war, okay? And I didn't come to this country until 1948. At the end of the war, we were living on my uncle's farm, about 40 kilometers north of Munich. And on April 28th, 1945, is when the front moved through our area. And that's when I started my love affair with Jeeps, okay? Because three American Jeeps pulled in and literally liberated us, all right? So, as a matter of fact, April 28th, 1945 was the day that I had my first piece of chewing gum.
Wow.
See. Okay, jumping forward, I was 6 and a half years old at that time. The age that I was when I came to this country was about 8 and a half, and I was 1948. And, lived in New York City, went to school there, went to college, St. John's, graduated in 1962. I volunteered for the Army for 3 years, and after I got out of the service, I actually got married while I was in the service, but after the service, got a job with IBM, worked there for 36 years, retired in 2001, and finally when our youngest son, I have three boys, our youngest son graduated college is when I went out and I bought a Jeep. And that's the Jeep that you saw at the at the show. Didn't think much about it. I mean, I was in love with the Jeeps. I always wanted to get one, but it wasn't until, I had some financial liberation from the kids having finished college that I was able to get one. And I restored it from a frame-up restoration. Didn't think much about it until it came time to mark the Jeep for, the unit that every vehicle in the Army identifies their vehicles as to the unit it belongs to. So I thought, once the Jeep was completed, I said, what unit am I going to mark it for? So I thought, wouldn't it be nice if I could mark it for the troops that came into my uncle's farm in 1948. So it took about 6 months of research to make a determination as to what unit those Jeeps belonged to. And to the best of what I could find out, it was elements of the 106th Cavalry Group that were members that those Jeeps belonged to, okay? And come to find out that they were still having reunions. So I actually started attending their reunions, and I did so for about 10 or 12 years, starting in 1996. And those ended up to be the markings on the Jeep. I found a treasure trove of photographs of the U.S. Cavalry World War II at those reunions. And I was determined to retrofit or configure my Jeep as a cavalry Jeep. And as such, I decided to make it a machine gun Jeep, which was one of the configurations of the Jeeps that the cavalry had. They had radios in them. As a matter of fact, it was mandatory for any field vehicle in the cavalry to have a field radio. So I've got myself an operational World War II radio in that Jeep. I set up a side mount machine gun like the cavalry had, and all the accoutrements that they would have placed on the Jeep. And some of the modifications that they did, they had the wire cutters in the front, for any wires that the enemy would stretch across the road. They also had the side mount machine gun, so I made myself a side mount. I actually had a veteran, Sergeant Joe Paganelli, living right here in Poughkeepsie. He was a sergeant in charge of a machine gun Jeep of the 106th Cavalry, and he told me, "Norm, you got to put a bustle basket on your Jeep because I had one on mine." So I made up a bustle basket and, suspended it in the back of the Jeep. And what was happening, I would bring the Jeep to the shows, and I had, people would say, "I never saw a side mount machine gun before." And I would whip out the photographs and say, "Well, here's the evidence, all right?" And they said, "Well, where did you get that, the machine gun mount?" I said, "Well, I made it." And same thing with the bustle basket. "Where'd you get that?" I said, "I made it." And then people would say, fellow Jeep owners, "Can you make one for me?" And so, in effect, what I'm doing is I'm making the field retrofits for the Jeeps. And my wife and I traveled to various military vehicle shows and exhibitions like you witnessed at Lasdon Park. And, selling those accoutrements, add-ons for the Jeep, that helps to defray the cost of doing the shows and whatnot. So we're having fun with it. I have the gas gun that you saw, the machine gun that I have mounted on a Jeep, is actually a simulator, and it uses a mixture of propane and oxygen, and when it fires, it sounds just like a machine gun. And let me tell you, the kids get a big kick out of shooting that thing.
I wanted to ask you about that because obviously, you do such a great job of teaching people the history behind it, and you're so patient with the families and the kids who are shooting it. I mean, to us, it was definitely the most visited spot that we saw. I mean, what does it mean to you, to be able to share the history about it? And there's obviously such a profound story behind this Jeep. What's it like to you to be able to teach and show these people and just let them have a good time with your Jeep?
Oh, yeah. And I also let the kids get into the Jeep and pose for photographs. Usually, I always sit them behind a machine gun and have the windshield down so you have a good view. People can take pictures. I put a helmet on the kids that are big enough and, that the helmet isn't too heavy for them. For the little ones, I put on a radar cap.
Cool.
Remember radar from MASH?
Oh, absolutely.
That was on TV. Yeah, so that's a recognizable thing. Everybody knows about the little hat. And that's actually a GI field cap from World War II, okay, that they wore. So, yeah. And also, in my estimation, like the history of the World War II cavalry is actually lost to history because no official army photographers traveled with the cavalry. It was too dangerous. Besides, they didn't have room for them. The cavalry operated on the front lines and behind enemy lines. You know, their job was to the eyes and ears of larger units. They were to assess the strength of the enemy. They had lots of firepower, and if it was a smaller unit that they came up against, they could take them on without any problems. But if they ran into big boys, you know, like a heavy armored unit or something like that, their job was to beat it the heck out of there and bring in the big boys.
Wow. Norm, it really is remarkable what you have, and again, I loved hearing that story about growing up and when those Jeeps pulled up to the farm. Just absolutely incredible. Do you have any plans? Is there any more vehicle shows coming up in the future where people might be able to catch you?
Well, I'll be going to the Gilbert Show. That's coming up. When is it? That's in September. What's the date on it? Hang on a second. Let me look at the calendar here. Gilbert Show is September 21st and 22nd, and it's in Gilbert, Pennsylvania. It's on a fairground.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll be set up there.
Well, Norm, we've got to run, but we thank you so much for your time today. I really recommend if people could make it out to that event, they do, and get to hear from you and learn and see your Jeep, because we had a blast, and we're really hoping to see it again one day, too. And we'd be happy to have you back on the show again one day, too. So thank you, Norm. It really was a pleasure talking with you today.
Yeah, one more thing.
Sure.
Is on Memorial Weekend, okay?
Okay.
That happens in the springtime, all right? But we actually have a World War II bivouac at the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Presidential Library.
Okay.
And that's on Memorial Weekend, Saturday, Sunday, not Memorial Day itself, but on Saturday, Sunday, people can come up there. There's half a dozen Jeeps there. There'll be a tracked vehicle there. All kinds of, living historians in proper uniforms and whatnot, and they do put on shooting demonstrations there as well.
Well, Norm, we're looking forward to it. We'll keep putting the word out. And once again, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, Norm. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Norm.
Veterans have helped protect and defend our country. To defend us, all have sacrificed some, but some have sacrificed all. The gratitude owed to veterans is immeasurable. They serve our country honorably, without question, and without asking for anything in return. Join Westchester Talk Radio as we honor our veterans with tales of heroism and sacrifice every second Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., live from Scarsdale Ford on Central Park Avenue in Scarsdale. Why We Stand, a very special program made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, our hosts Scarsdale Ford, and Shark Creative. And you can always listen on demand at westchestertalkradio.com under the podcast page. You can also find more information about Why We Stand at scarsdaleford.com.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Why We Stand on Westchester Talk Radio. I'm Joe Arcino. We are broadcasting live from Scarsdale Ford. We are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, MSM Designs, Game Sportswear, and again, cannot thank Scarsdale Ford enough. It was not the nicest day today, but thanks to Scarsdale Ford's nice showroom, we've got a nice comfy spot to be in. I am joined once again by our friend Luis Chirinos. Luis, thank you for coming on again today.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure talking
I know. I was really glad we were able to link up and make this happen again, because last time people really enjoyed hearing about you, about the big tennis event that was coming up. So obviously, we talked about the event. The event happened. How did it go?
It was kind of like a tricky day.
Okay. Well, the weather originally was scheduled for earlier in, I believe, the end of July, but then bad weather like today, it put a thorn in those
So,
players.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be July 25th. Okay. You know, we were hoping to get, like, a big turnout. We did have a big turnout, but then, obviously, the weather, you know, it's unpredictable, as you can see. You can never tell. So, unfortunately, it got canceled on the July 25th, so we rescheduled it for August 1st, which is the next, the very next Wednesday. And then, and come forward August 1st, it started to pour.
Like, it did.
Like crazy. So I started getting messages from everybody saying, like, oh, is the event still going to happen? Is it going to happen? I had to speak with everybody. It's like, well, you know, just hang on, you know, I'll let you know in a little bit. But thankfully, like around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, it was shining. Like, the sun came out. It was great. And then I confirmed with Janet, who you know, she is in charge of the courts up in there in Greenberg. She said the courts look nice. I think we're good to go. So thankfully, you know, we didn't cancel it. We went on with the program, and I think it was great. I mean, we had about 15, 16 people coming in. It was still a pretty good turnout. And, I mean, the event was great. They all really had fun. I had, of course, you know, my volunteers over there, which I'll give them a shout out in a little bit. And, I mean, it was a great experience for them. They absolutely loved it. And what's more important, too, I kind of want to mention this. I got to speak with a few of those veterans that did came. And I also do something similar at Yonkers Tennis Center.
Okay.
So it started with myself and Isaac. And
The audience knows Isaac very well.
I'm pretty sure Isaac is very popular in this radio show.
Oh, yeah.
And all of Westchester now, hopefully. Yeah.
Pretty much.
So I started doing, like, you know, like lessons with Isaac. Then it grew with... it grew to two people with Mike. Mike is one of the veterans as well that was there. So, and then now we have Maciel. And now we have a couple of other people, the veterans now. So I'm kind of starting like a clinic, weekly thing. So it's really good. And I also know that Isaac mentioned to me that Janet is doing something on Wednesdays now.
Yes, she talked about it, her part of her Hero Tennis for Wounded Warriors program.
Yes, so he wanted me to, you know, speak with her. I'll probably reach out to her afterwards. Like, let's collaborate a little bit.
Absolutely.
Let's see what we can do. So that's two things a week that they could be doing. So that it's really great. It's really growing. But overall, I mean, I think the event was a success. They all had fun. I asked the volunteers too, the coaches. They all loved it. They think it was a great experience. And I also had a couple of junior volunteers. They had a lot of fun. They I'm sure, you know, they learned a lot of things, which is what I wanted, you know, for
Absolutely.
Them to experience. And and thankful for their time, really.
Well, and a lot of people. It's usually their first time getting introduced
That's right.
to tennis.
Yeah.
And like Jana was telling us, you know, the goal is, and I think you spoke on this a little bit before too, is it's not just to introduce them to the game, but to get them to stay with it. Mm-hmm. And she's already gotten people signed up for this next one. So it seems like that goal was definitely reached.
I think so too. I mean, That's what I mentioned, you know, the last time I was here is, you know, just to get them hooked. I think tennis is... I believe I said it's like a sport that you can play for a lifetime.
You did. You said that.
So I think that's probably like my selling point. You know, you can do that for a lifetime. You can play with your friends, family, you know, whoever. You can play with a wall. I remember I mentioned that one too, right?
I like that one.
You can play with a wall too. You don't really need another person. And it's a great cardio. It's a great exercise. And it's for a great cause. You know, you're meeting other people who have like the same background.
The social aspect of it
absolutely
is great.
It's a great social aspect. They don't have to feel, you know, they're not alone, you know, in this. And I think it's a great supporting or a great support for all of them. And I mean, I can tell you Isaac has gone so much better with this, just, you know, just being there, just playing. It's a sport, but it's more than that, you know. So I think the whole thing that we are all doing as a group, you know, with Janet, myself, Isaac, Allison, Mr. Joe, it's a great group of people. We're all in it for the right reasons, and I mean we're helping these people. And
yes.
Isaac, it really starts with Isaac.
Well, no, it's like you said, you are really a great, special group of people. And that's why it's always our pleasure to bring you guys on, because, you know, we always want to be helping get the word out there, because what you're doing is incredible. And it's so nice to hear these stories, because when you have something like this that helps veterans get out there, interact with other people, move around, get introduced to a sport that they can play in and is very accessible. And, you know, Janet always mentioned this too. Tennis isn't a sport where you need to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to keep on playing it.
It's true,
it's a very accessible sport. And when you get introduced to it, it really does wonders.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's so many parks out there, and we want to get the word out. So I think this is a pretty good way to do it. So, you know,
keep on doing it. I know you have a lot of people, though, you said that you wanted to give a shout out to and thank them for. So I want you to, of course, make sure you have time for that.
Sure. Yeah, just very quickly. Of course, my two regular coaches, I had Alexa Goldberg and Vito Galotioto. Those were they work at the Yonkers Center with me. But I also I brought three kind of like younger junior pros. So big thank you to Chris Liu, Jorge Arenas, and Joanna Rosario. Joanna and Jorge, they work at the City Parks Foundation in the Bronx, which what I'm doing in the summer. And Chris, he is one of the players that's part of the program at Yonkers Tennis Center. So, you know, a big thank you guys, really. I mean, I really hope you learned a lot. Like I said before, it's for a good cause, and really your time is very important, and I'm glad you were there to share that experience.
And obviously, you just came from a tennis lesson before this teaching. You obviously, you know what you're doing, that's for sure. And if I was ever going to get lessons from anyone, you would be the man I want to get them.
Thank you.
From.
Wow. Okay.
Where can people find you? You know, if people want to or like hear it, and they've heard us talk a lot about tennis since we've started this show. If people finally listen, like, all right, I got to give it a go. I got to get some lessons. I got to try it out. Where can they get in contact with you?
Well, you can get in contact with me. I work primarily at Yonkers Tennis Center. Our regular season starts in, I believe, second week of September. We're located in 493 Spring Road. It's in Yonkers. It's near the Rich Hill Mall. We have programs for adults, for juniors, everything. Private lessons, clinics, you know, free open time or whatever you might like. We have it there. So, yeah, just reach out to them. I think the number is 914-968-6918, extension 0 for the front desk. And you can schedule
it
anytime.
You can get the extension from this
guy.
Oh,
well, yeah. It's in here.
That is very cool. And it's phenomenal. Before we end, let's hit on one more time the Hero Tennis for Wounded Warriors that's coming up. You mentioned before you've kind of got your own thing that you're starting. How far along are you with it? And for people to reach out to you, obviously, this will hopefully help them too.
The Hero program I'm not exactly part of yet. That's kind of like a Janet thing. But I will reach out to her, you know, so we can collaborate.
Absolutely. Because
Isaac mentioned, you know,
you have a lot of experience in this, certainly.
Right. So she said, he said, excuse me, that she would be interested in doing something together. But when I come back next time, hopefully, if you'd love to have me, I would love to.
You know, you're always welcome on the show.
Thank you. But the thing that I'm doing is kind of, as of right now for the summer, because of, you know, my schedule and Yonkers Tennis Center schedules, I do something right now on Fridays from 5 to 6 p.m. in which I'm just taking as many veterans as I can with the courts that I have. And I kind of just go over, you know, basic instruction. So it's more instructional based instead of like the Wednesday events that we did. That's more, you know, just get them going, just get them, you know, playing cardio. So this one's a little bit more instructional. My ultimate goal is to have literally every single court on the Yonkers Tennis Center filled with veterans playing. And I'm kind of just, you know, running it kind of like a boot camp sort of thing.
That's fantastic goal, and we want to help you reach it there.
Oh, thank you.
You're going to have to come on next time and tell us how it's going.
Absolutely.
Luis Chirinos, everyone, thank you for joining us again. I'm Joe Archino. Thank you for tuning in to This Is Why We Stand. A big shout-out once again to Scarsdale Ford. We could not be doing this show without them. We want to thank all you for listening, and then, of course, all of our sponsors in Scarsdale Ford. Everyone, I'm Joe Archino. We'll see you next time.
Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends, bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better.
Shark Creative.